Thank you. Be seated.
The court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner in the case of Whitson v. Goodbody.
May I plead the court, Mr. Corey C. Rose, and you will argue for the petitioner.
May I please the court? My name is Corey Groves, attorney in Dallas. I represent the original plaintiff and the petitioner today, Gary Whitson. Mr. Whitson, in the facts of this case, was injured on March the 12th, 1986, while doing an aerobic exercise at Goodbody's Aerobic Center in Dallas. While doing this exercise, he was in a room with a number of other people, and his left heel was stepped on by another participant and ruptured the Achilles tendon on his left heel, requiring surgery and other treatment. From his injury, he filed a lawsuit in Dallas. The defendant, Goodbody's, answered and filed a motion for summary judgment based solely on the what I call a waiver that he signed prior to his initial workout with Goodbody's. The court in Dallas granted summary judgment on that sole waiver by its terms, and appeal was taken before the Court of Appeals in Dallas, which affirmed that ruling. The sole issue in both instances was whether the waiver that he signed contained language specific enough to, dismiss any negligence action he had, and whether the express negligence doctrine as adopted by this court should be applied to his exculpatory agreement that he signed. I would submit that, yes, the express negligence doctrine should be adopted to include an exculpatory agreement as he signed, and further that when it is applied, that it would invalidate the exculpatory agreement, and this case should be reversed and remanded to the trial court for further argument.
What's lacking in that agreement?
I'm sorry?
If we adopt the express negligence rule as you are proposing, you know, how would the contract be written any different? What is lacking? What
the agreement which Mr. Whitson signed does not contain language of fault or negligence or language of Goodbody's attempting to exclude their own liability. It contains some general ambiguous language of Mr. Whitson should not file lawsuits, he should assume his own responsibilities for coming to this place, but there is no specific language as to him waiving his own, or waiving Goodbody's own negligence for anything that may occur while in this workout.
Well, it says, it is understood and agreed that the undersigned shall not bring or cause to be brought any action due to any personal injury or property damage that might result from the undersigned's participation in any exercise.
I agree.
Workout, whether under the supervision of an instructor or the undersigned's own direction. To restate in summary form, the undersigned agrees to accept full responsibility and to hold harmless Goodbody's and all persons in the aforementioned employ. So not only is the agreement, as I understand it, saying that we're not responsible for anything that may happen in your class, but anything our employees may do. What more can the agreement say to make it very express that he's going to engage in exercise patch at his own risk?
It can say, in addition to that, that regardless of any cause or fault or negligence on the part of Goodbody's, the waiver on itself does not distinguish at all between any fault of Mr. Whitson or any participant or any fault of Goodbody's themselves. As Mr. Whitson stated in his deposition, when he read the agreement, he understood it to mean that he waived any potential responsibility of his own if he may do something to injure himself, but in no way understood that by signing this, he waived any negligence of Goodbody's in performing their practices there, in keeping their upkeep, in providing a safe room, in putting too many people in a room, which he's alleged, which caused his injury.
Had this been not an aerobics class, but a baseball game, and if he got beamed by, you know, hit by a pitcher, or had it been a basketball game, he got an elbow in the eye or in the ribs, You see a distinction?
I don't see a distinction there, Your Honor, in that, once again, he would need to be put on notice that by coming to this facility, participating in this sport...
If he gets an elbow in the eye, they're not responsible. He would have them draft an agreement so elaborate to cover every eventuality.
I would have it drafted so that it is clear that he waives any responsibility for anything he does, that he waives any responsibility for anything that good bodies may do or that may occur at this scene, so that he will understand that should something go wrong and it's beyond his control, he cannot, that someone else causes his injury or something beyond his control, that he cannot bring an action against them.
A basketball player who paid for the privilege of playing for some college or university or professional team?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Have you ever heard of a basketball player who paid a college or university to recruit him to come play basketball for him? Or paid an NBA team to allow him to play for them?
I don't know that the NCAA would allow that, Your Honor. I assume that people do this.
Mr. Whitson did pay you for the privilege of going out here to this place to do his exercise.
Well, he paid a fee each month to participate with this aerobic center.
That might be a distinction between the hypothetical situation we're talking about.
Well, just as in the a bailment or even a voluntary parking lot where one is given perhaps a receipt or a notice is posted on the wall that we won't be responsible for anything that happened, that person would otherwise not go to that place or participate there if they were given notice that they weren't being responsible for anything that was beyond their control. I assume that Mr. Whitson would not go to good bodies if he thought that if the floor caved in or if he was injured, that he could not bring an action for how he was injured in doing that. Just the same as if someone participated in a basketball game or parked their car in a free surface lot, if an employee of either of those places injured him or injured his property, then they would not park there or participate there if they were given notice that I won't be able to recover anything. In this instance, Mr. Whitson was not given notice that if good bodies did something wrong, if something happened, that he could not come back for recourse.
Is it your position that this exculpatory clause is ambiguous?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
Was it printed on the front or the back of the contract?
It was printed on a one-page document separate by itself, containing these two paragraphs here. And Mr. Whitson signed it at the bottom. It was not in a separate contract. It was not in the fee contract. It was just a separate piece of paper, and it was untitled. It didn't say waiver or exculpatory clause or release or anything like that on the top. It just had the headnote good bodies at the top of it. My argument specifically centers on the difference between the old law as with regard to exculpatory agreements and the new law which has been adopted by this court with regard to the express negligence doctrine. The old law being that with exculpatory agreements and with indemnity clauses that it was a clear and unequivocal test that you should be given notice of what happened or what you're releasing, but in no specific terms. It wasn't defined to say anything specifically, just in broad terms that you may be releasing yourself. With the adoption of the express negligence doctrine in Ethel, it became a stricter test to be a express compliance, a strict compliance, to let one know that they are releasing the liability that the other one may cause.
Is there any application of the Ethel rule, which applies to indemnity contracts, to exculpatory contracts in any jurisdiction that you're aware of?
I am not aware of in any other jurisdiction, although I have not made a search of every jurisdiction. There are probably 200 or 300 cases which I looked through in American Jurisprudence and CJS, and many other jurisdictions have made comments on exculpatory agreements, but none of them have compared them to the express negligence doctrine.
If the express negligence doctrine does not apply in this case, do you lose?
I don't believe I specifically lose in that. I would submit further that the document which was signed by Mr. Whitson would not comply with the clear and unequivocal rule either.
Clear and unequivocal rule.
The rule for exculpatory clauses as it stands today is the clear and unequivocal rule, which states that the document should be examined in its four corners to be clear and unequivocal as to its terms of what it says. By my submission, this document does not clearly and unequivocally say that Goodbodies is giving notice to Mr. Whitson that it is disclaiming all of its liability that it may do because of its own negligence. In the express negligence rule, the standard is now a higher standard, saying that it must specifically state within the four corners that one is attempting to waive their own liability.
What's the difference between express negligence and clear and unequivocal?
The express negligence must say in specific terms, which the court has included to actually say, I am excluding my own liability because of my own negligence. And the one case that I have seen that may be on point since the time of Ethel is one that this court reviewed, is the ARCO case cited in the brief, in which the court concluded that following the express negligence doctrine, the language sufficient to cover one on that must say that I'm excluding my own negligence, which is the specific terms of the ARCO indemnity clause, and which this court found was sufficient to satisfy the express negligence doctrine. I would submit today that an indemnity clause versus an exculpatory clause is the same, relatively. They are both transferring liability to the other party to the contract. They're both exempting their own selves from liability, and the case law and the trend shows that if it is not adopted for the express negligence rule, then basically the express negligence rule would have to be overruled. The two types of contracts are the same in that they both attempt to do the same thing by adopting the express negligence doctrine to an exculpatory agreement specifically. We are evening out the contracting power.
Any circumstances where it violates public policy to make a contract that exculpates one from one's own negligence? Or can you always do that if you draw it clearly enough?
The courts in the past and the decisions have examined public policy to be that one may exclude their own public policy, may exclude their own liability if there is not an unfair bargaining position, if there is not any type of alternative to contract. The bargaining position is something that's been raised in a lot of other cases. I have not raised it today.
If there was only one exercise company in town,
or
would that make the facts different?
If he had no choice but to go to this exercise company, or if all the other exercise companies required the same thing with the same type of contract, I think there's a serious problem.
So it kind of gets into the whole antitrust consideration almost.
In that just about anywhere you go today, generally speaking, you're asked to sign some type of waiver or given notice of some type of waiver, be it on a bulletin board or the back of a ticket or a sign in front of a place.
But you haven't made that kind of proof at the trial court.
I have not made proof as to whether this is an unconscionable contract.
Mm-hmm.
Since Mr. Whitson did sign this agreement, I think that is something that can be considered, although it probably will come up again on an unsigned agreement, for example, the back of a ticket, or a bulletin board posted where it was not explained.
Does the record show the age of the client and the educational background of the client?
I don't believe his deposition may show his age. Mr. McClure took his deposition and his educational background. He is he's a college graduate, was an athletic individual in his mid-30s. Now, as to the language of good body specifically, I want to tie that in with the express negligence doctrine in that language of good bodies, I'll go ahead and read the contract. It is understood and agreed that the undersigned shall not bring or cause to be brought any action due to any personal injury or property damage that might result from the undersigned's participation in any exercise, dance, or workout, whether under the supervision or any instructor or by the undersigned's own direction. Paragraph 2. To restate, the undersigned agrees to accept full responsibility and to hold harmless good bodies and or all persons in the aforementioned employ. Applying the Epple case and the Arco case, an indemnity agreement, which contains similar type language excluding one from liability, must state in specific terms that I am excluding my own negligence. In those many words, this contract does not state I am excluding my own negligence or fault or liability in any way.
What is your theory of liability, counsel? Your client got stepped on by somebody who was in the aerobics class. You know, how was the owner of the gym or this place to prevent this accident from happening? What is your theory of liability?
Justice Gonzalez, the theory of liability never came up at summary judgment. It's strictly the contract. But to point out what is in plaintiff's petition, I believe that I can prove at trial that good bodies, number one, was having too many people in this room, that the room was not constructed with the right size and requirements to handle this type of exercise, that they are doing the wrong type of exercise, and that they had been warned by their own employee that they should not do that type of exercise and that they should not crowd this many people into this room because of the risk of injury. This was basically an exercise where there were in excess of 20 people in a room along walls on either side would do an exercise and then run across to the other side of the room.
I do that every day.
When there's too many people in the room, there's going to be collisions. There's going to be people thrown up against the wall. The actual instructor who was in charge of this facility had warned the facility that that was an unsafe exercise to do.
What size was the waiver or exculpatory language printed on? 8.5 by 11, or was it a small sheet of paper, and what size type was used?
It was an 8.5 by 11 sheet. It was a normal size type. I would state that some of it was in all caps. It was a separate piece of paper. And Mr. Whitson signed it at the bottom. According to his deposition testimony, he did not have it explained to him that he would be waiving any liability of good bodies, only his own. And that's the way he understood it. From the way I read the contract, I would certainly understand it to be the same. That I won't sue you for anything that I cause, and that's my fault. But on the other hand, I don't waive my ability to sue for anything that may be your fault, that I don't have any control of.
You said part was in all caps. What part was in all caps?
I don't have the document with me, Your Honor, but I can get it for rebuttal and present that to the court. It is contained in the appeal documents before the Court of Appeals in Dallas, which should have been included with you today.
You're saying that you as a lawyer would read this and sign it without hesitation, realizing that you could continue to sue for various different things that might happen to you, just not some of them.
I, as a lawyer, would not want to sign it at all and would do what I could to keep from signing it, and knowing that I may have to go to another aerobic studio and may have to go through the same thing there, especially from me doing this case, I don't want to release myself of anything which I don't feel is clear. Had the clause been in there stating that I understand I'm releasing the liability of Goodbody should they do anything wrong and signed it, well, there wouldn't be much question if it specifically stated that they're releasing their own negligence. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
I plead the court, Mr. Wayne L. McClure will present argument for respondent.
May it please the court, my name is Wade McClure and I represent the respondent Goodbodies in this case. And before I proceed, I'd like to ask the court, I woke up with a cold down in my throat, and if you can't hear me, just tell me to speak up and I'll try to do that. It's my understanding from reading the appeals in this case that the sole issue which was presented by the petitioner was whether or not the express negligence standards applies to this case, to the waiver and release at issue in this case. And we've had Judge Gonzalez read the release, and Mr. Groves had read the release too, so I won't go into it and read it again. But I think it's safe to say from my reading of the release, under a reasonable person's interpretation, it is clear and unambiguous. They go as far as to restate what they're trying to say in the release and say it twice by the last paragraph to restate. The undersigned agrees to accept full responsibility and hold harmless Goodbodies and persons under its employment. So I think it's clear, and the question for this court is whether you look at it and you look at it and you analyze it and imply the clear meaning of that clause, or whether or not for some reason you have to apply a higher or more strict scrutiny of that provision. And what the petitioner is requesting you do is apply the scrutiny that was applied to indemnity agreements in Ethel. And he basically gives two reasons for that argument. And I think both those reasons fail. First of all, in Ethel, this court set down a reason why to apply the express negligence standard over the normal standard. And the reason for that is because artful lawyers were subtly concealing the intent of a contract provision in a big contract to try to hide from the other side the effect of it, but then again to argue later that the effect of this is that you also agreed to accept responsibility for acts of my own negligence. That's what the court said in Ethel, and that's how the court has applied it. In response to Justice Heck's question, there have never been any cases cited in Texas where the express negligence standard has been applied to anything other than in indemnity agreements. And as far as the Court of Appeals research goes, and my research goes, I couldn't find any in any other states either. Of course, I didn't have a pressing desire as much as Mr. Groves did to find it, but I couldn't find it either.
Did you find any states that had even taken up the question?
I didn't really find any that had even addressed the issue. Didn't find anywhere it was even addressed. Now, the reason in Ethel then is because they said that this was agreement, there was concealment, there was a hidden meaning. None of those apply in this case. This agreement it's on a one-page document. There's no concealment here. The people were trying as hard as they could. They weren't lawyers. They were trying to draft this to cover themselves. And that's why they say it twice. So I think that the reason for application of the standard in Apple doesn't apply here. Petitioner also argues that, well, we ought to have a uniform standard and let's bring this back into uniformity and have everything applied the same way. Well, I submit that the whole reason we had Apple, we had the express negligence test in Ethel, is to apply a more strict test in situations where it's needed, similar to the way people may construe portions of the Constitution. And so the whole purpose in Ethel is obviated if this course makes it uniform again. So I think that's not a good analogy either, and I submit to the court that that reason given by the petitioner is not well thought. Another analogy made by the petitioner in their briefs, and he didn't mention it here today, is an analogy that if you don't apply it, the express negligence test, then laypersons aren't given the same benefit as business persons. I think that analogy is a little confusing because most business people or law business people are laypersons when it comes to law. And I think what he may be making the analogy to is poor people as opposed to rich people. And if that's what his analogy is, I think it's misguided, because if you look at it, this is something that essentially certain contracts, certain people that provide certain services need to have. They need to be able to make this type of contract for their business, especially in the recreational area, when you're dealing with a recreational area such as this. And I submit it's something that's basic. If you require stricter scrutiny, if you apply the express negligence test, then what you do is you have the small business person, such as Terry Casey of Good Bodies, have to hire a lawyer to draft this document in order to cover herself. And by doing that, what you do is you bring in the lawyers again to start working on documents, which under Ethel we were trying to make a strict standard to avoid that. So I think there's I think that the whole philosophy between why we have a strict standard, or why you all impose the strict standard in Ethel, and why you would want to do it here is different and should be, and I think it should be left the way it is. In my brief, I also argue that if you apply the express negligence standard to this provision, if you look at it, you still have to say it complies with that standard. And the reason is the test is you look at the four corners of the agreement and you determine whether or not it expressly states that there is a waiver by the party of acts of the other party's negligence. And I think if you read this, I think that's what it states. I think it clearly states that. And I want to make that point.
Is this term negotiable?
As far as there being...
anybody coming in, do they have any real choice in whether to accept this provision?
I don't think there's any record on that. I don't think that was a portion or something that was gone into during the depositions. So I don't know what the situation would be. I would submit that... that question, Judge, goes to whether or not this is a contract of adhesion. And I think that the petitioners have conceded that they're not making that argument here today. They're not making the argument that that's what type of contract or the issue that's before the court today. In summary, there's no reason to apply a higher standard of express negligence to this contract. The clear and unequivocal test is a high enough standard. And that standard is one that the cases, the McAdams case, says you have to strictly look at this agreement to make sure it says what it means. And it applies with that clear and unequivocal standard. There's no reason to extend the standard, to heighten it again, to require the word negligence, if in fact that's what the express negligence test requires. There's no concealment in this. There's no hidden meaning. The people, Terry Casey at Good Bodies, tried to say it twice, to make sure the person signing it knew what they were signing. Uniformity isn't a sufficient reason. Clear and unequivocal is a high standard anyway, and if they comply with that, they should be able to get by and have a sufficient exculpatory provision. In petitioner's brief, they allude to the fact that if this court does not apply the express negligence standard in this case, then in effect that means that by signing this document, the petitioner has waived all of his rights in this case. And I just want to make it clear that that's not what a ruling as that would do in this case. There are other limitations on exculpatory provisions that aren't brought up on this appeal that protect somebody in the petitioner's shoes. For example, the DTPA limits or says under Melody Home that you can't waive exculpatory provisions. There's a Golden Triangle Wasteway case that says you can't limit it by way of an exculpatory provision at causes of action against gross negligence. You can't limit by way of an exculpatory provision intentional actions, intentional torts. Those cannot be waived. Moreover, there's case law that says that you can't waive a strict liability claim by an exculpatory provision. Lastly, there are public policy considerations such as adhesion and contracts of adhesion. Those type of contracts are thrown out against public policy. And those are situations where someone has to have something. There's only one place he can go, and there's this big contract that says, yeah, we'll give it to you, but you got to waive your claim. And then after all those hurdles are all over with, to protect the petitioner in this case, then they still have to meet the bottom line standard, and that's the clear and unequivocal test. And maybe I'm confused, and if I am, then the Court of Appeals is confused, but I don't think that that issue, whether this complies with the clear and unequivocal test, is a point of error that's before this court. I think that was conceded with the Court of Appeals, that it does meet that test, and if that's the case, then the only issue is whether the express negligence standard applies. There's no reason to extend that standard into this type of contract. If you do, you obligate or you burden an area that doesn't need to be burdened because it just doesn't require the heightened scrutiny. For those reasons, I'd ask for you to affirm the trial court and the Court of Appeals ruling in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
In rebuttal, I believe the respondent would have the court believe that the difference between an exculpatory clause and an indemnity contract is one versus a big business versus small business. This is not a fact of life. This is not a truth with any of these contracts. An exculpatory clause is often found with an indemnity agreement in all types of contracts. They're found in business situations, in consumer situations, with big companies, with small companies. I don't see that there's any discrimination between any types of size of a company or consumer versus large company for types of contracts that they write. I would also point to, on that point, a case that is not cited in the brief, but maybe on point in this area, is Ticket versus J.J. Willis Trucking, a Houston NRE case, 624 Southwest 2nd, 664. In this case, the court in Houston examined a contract which contained both an indemnity clause and an exculpatory agreement. The court found that they saw no difference for argument purposes or for analyzation purposes between the two types of agreements. At that time, this was a 1981 case, there was an examination under the clear and unequivocal test. By applying a similar argument to this type of case, the analysis compels one to look at an indemnity contract as well as an exculpatory agreement in the same light. In looking at it in that light, the express negligence doctrine must be applied to an exculpatory agreement just the same as an indemnity contract. And by applying those points of law in the cases on express negligence doctrine, the waiver signed by Mr. Whitson cannot be held to be valid. It does not contain the language as promulgated by this court for expressly waiving one's liability. There is not specific language as to one waiving their negligence, their any liability, or one attempting to waive their own liability, which I think is the central point here.
What is your position on whether this release does or does not meet the clear and unequivocal rule?
My position is that this release neither meets the clear and unequivocal rule and certainly does not meet the express negligence doctrine.
And you have asserted that in the trial court and the court of appeals?
I have asserted that I do not believe it establishes either test all the way along. I admitted in the court of appeals argument that I certainly admit that Mr. Whitson signed this document, that he testified that he read it, and he testified that he did not understand it. I also admit that there is certainly case law which says if one signs a release, then they are held by it and may lose their liability. I bring today the purpose for making an exculpatory clause the same in the light of this court's ruling as the express negligence, with the express negligence doctrine as an indemnity clause. They're both viewed in the same light by the courts. This court has chosen to take a stricter standard with the express negligence doctrine on indemnity contracts. Therefore, they should take the same standard with exculpatory clauses.
Did you preserve the point in the point of error that this contract does not meet the clear and unequivocal rule?
I did not submit a separate error on the clear and unequivocal rule. My sole error is that the court failed to properly acknowledge that the contract comes under the express negligence doctrine.
So then you waive that point.
If the court views that by arguing it and not preserving it with a separate point of error, I've waived it, then I have. The Court of Appeals, in its analysis, made two points in its decision. One, that it attempted to distinguish between an indemnity clause and an exculpatory clause, which under the Pickett case, which I cited, is not distinguishable. They're viewed by the courts as one and the same, and they both achieve the same purpose. The Court of Appeals also viewed that the express negligence doctrine, since it had not been adopted for any exculpatory cases, was not going to be considered.
Did you argue that on a motion for rehearing before the Court of Appeals?
I'm sorry, which did I argue?
Whether or not the contract met the standard that you enunciated clear before Ethel, clear and unequivocal standard.
I argued in my brief on my motion for rehearing that the Court of Appeals, in its two decisions of attempting to extinguish between indemnity and exculpatory, and in not adopting the express negligence doctrine, had made error in both those areas. That included that it had not reversed the case for clear and unequivocal rule. Now, that is not established as a separate error, but I would submit to the court that it's undeniable that this one does not meet that. No further questions. That concludes my presentation.
Any questions? That concludes the argument in the second clause. The court will take its last recess.
The argument is pretty dry.